year beginning. So my name is Callie. I'm another officer for AHA here at UW-Madison. But you're not here to see me. You're here to see this man. Our next speaker is UW-Madison's very own Professor Elliot Stolberg, who is currently the Hans Reichenbach Professor and William F. Vilas Research Professor in the Department of Philosophy here at UW-Madison. He is a Harvard University graduate, having earned there his PhD in philosophy. In addition, he is the published author of many books, including Did Darwin Write the Origin Backwards? And Evidence and Evolution. He is noted for his work in the philosophy of science, particularly the philosophy of biology. Professor Stolberg is also a prominent critic of intelligent design, which I'm sure is probably a shared view with many of the people in this room. Yay, free thinking. Atheists, humanists, and agnostics are proud to welcome a fellow Madisonian to the stage for his talk, some questions for atheists to think about. Professor Elliot Stolberg.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Out of curiosity, how many of you are atheists? Whoa! How many of you are agnostics? And how many of you are just shopping? No one? All right. So this is a philosophy talk. And I'm going to be talking about what evidentialism is. That's a kind of word from philosophy. I'm going to talk about what evidentialism says about atheism. And then I'm going to talk a little bit about whether evidentialism is true. Just to get the terminology straight, this should be familiar to you. This is how we use the terms theism, atheism, and agnosticism now. And I'm going to be drawing on material from a debate that took place among two American philosophers at the end of the 19th century, William James, who you probably have heard about. His brother was Henry James, the great novelist. A big-time psychologist as well as an important philosopher, and someone you perhaps have not heard of if you're not already a philosopher, W.K. Clifford. They had a debate about this idea that I'm calling evidentialism, and I'm going to be drawing on that. This is how W.K. Clifford defines evidentialism. It's the view that it's wrong always, everywhere, and for anyone to believe anything upon insufficient evidence. Now, you might wonder what insufficient means. How much evidence do you got to have for it to be true that you ought to believe something? And I'm not going to try to answer that. I'm going to take a more modest version of evidentialism is what I want to talk about, what you see here. So the version of evidentialism that I want to talk about today in connection with atheism is the idea for any proposition, for any statement, you should believe it only if you have evidence that it's true. And you should disbelieve it only if you have evidence that it's false. And there are two questions I want to ask about this philosophical attitude towards how you should conduct your life in terms of what you believe and what you disbelieve. And I'm going to talk about the relationship of evidentialism to the question of whether you should believe that God exists. And then separately, I want to talk about whether evidentialism is actually true. Is it the standard that each of us should adopt in deciding whether to believe something, whether to disbelieve something, or thirdly, whether to suspend judgment and be agnostic about it. So what does evidentialism say about the question about whether God exists? Well, kind of obviously, it says that you should believe it. You're entitled to believe that God does not exist. We're talking about atheism now. Only if there's evidence that God does not exist. Which means that if the statement God exists is something you can't test, is something that you could never get any evidence for one way or the other, then what evidentialism says is you should not be an atheist, those 98% of you out there. It says that you should suspend judgment and be like the 2% out there, be an agnostic and say, I don't know. So evidentialism endorses either atheism or agnosticism, depending on whether there's evidence against the existence of God or zero evidence one way or the other. It all depends. Well, as you all are well aware, there are many different conceptions of what God would be like if he existed. And I have two examples up here just as sort of examples to work with. This obviously doesn't exhaust all the possible views you might have about what God would be like if there were such a being. The first is the God of young earth creationism. This is the view that God created life on earth within the last 50,000 years. Then there's a different God entirely, which I'm going to just call the God of New Age spirituality. This is a vaguer category, but I hope you'll go with me on this. And it's the idea that God is a mysterious force who gives life its meaning. These are two very different pictures of what God would be like if there were such a being. Question, what does evidentialism say about each of them? And of course, whether you ought to be an atheist or not depends upon what you mean by God. So it's really got a split view. If you're talking about God in the sense of young earth creationism, I think evidentialism tells you you should be an atheist because there's tons of evidence, strong evidence from science, that life did not begin 50,000 years ago or more recently. It's about 3.8 billion years old. And if that's strongly supported by evidence, we know that God did not create life on Earth in the last 50,000 years. So I think what evidentialism tells us about that picture of what God would be like if there were such a being is we should disbelieve, we should be atheistic about the God of young earth creationism. Well, what about the God of New Age spirituality? I don't know, but go with me with this example for a minute. Suppose it's true that that God is so vaguely defined that there's no way you could ever get any evidence that it exists or that it does not exist. It's just not that kind of proposition. Well, if that's what the God of New Age spirituality is all about, then there couldn't be any evidence that he exists. There couldn't be any evidence that she does not exist. And so what evidentialism says is, don't be an atheist. Don't be a theist. Suspend judgment and be an agnostic. So what evidentialism as a philosophy tells you about whether you should be an atheist or not depends on what you mean by God. For certain understanding of what God would be like if there were such a being like young earth creationism, I think it gives you the recommendation, be an atheist. But for other sort of vaguer formulations of the God idea, its recommendation is not atheism, it's agnosticism. So those of you in the majority and those of you in the minority, maybe you should talk to each other over beer tonight after the next talk. Okay, so I talked about what evidentialism actually says about what you should think about the existence of God, but now let's step back one step and ask, well, what about this philosophy? What about evidentialism? Is it a true picture of how we should conduct ourselves? Is it true that we should believe things only if we have evidence for them, and that we should disbelieve things only if we have evidence against them? That's what evidentialism says. Is that the right way to sort of regulate the beliefs you have, and of course, the disbeliefs that we have also? Well, W.K. Clifford, in his controversy with William James, gave this as an argument for why you ought to be an evidentialist. He said, if you believe anything without sufficient evidence, society will, and this is his phrase, sink back into savagery. I don't think that's a very good argument. Look, I mean, our society is kind of bad off now, and many of us do believe things about upon insufficient evidence, but to say that we have sunk back into savagery, that seems like an exaggeration. It seems like W.K.'s argument is kind of a boogeyman argument. If you believe even one little thing for insufficient evidence, the whole world's going to go to hell. And you don't want that to happen, so be an evidentialist. Not a very convincing argument, I think. Well, Here's an argument against evidentialism, against W.K. Clifford's point of view. It's not really an argument, it's a consideration. Maybe there are some propositions that we are entitled to believe, even though we cannot offer any evidence in their support. If there was even one such belief, evidentialism would be wrong. So are there any examples of this sort where we're entitled to believe something, though when we're asked, okay, what's the evidence for it? We just say, I don't know, I don't have any evidence, but I think it's okay for me to believe that thing. Well, here are some examples that philosophers have suggested might be candidates for rightly violating what evidentialism says. The belief that there's a world outside my own mind, your own mind. The belief that there's a difference between right and wrong. Maybe these are the kinds of propositions that we really can't prove, we can't really give evidence for in any sort of scientific sense of evidence, but maybe it's okay for us to believe this. It plays some sort of important role in our lives to embrace these as commitments, even though when challenged, we have to say, I don't have any evidence for that. And then the question is, if you think those examples might be plausible examples of beliefs you're entitled to have which violate evidentialism, what about belief in God? Could that be like the other cases? Could that be a case where, at least for some people, you're entitled to be a theist, even though when you're pressed, you say, well, I don't have any evidence for that. If that's okay, evidentialism is mistaken as a philosophy. James gave an argument of that sort. And here is a kind of simplified version of the thought that he pressed against W.K. Clifford. This is James attacking evidentialism. So he says, suppose you're the sort of person who can lead a happy, productive life if you believe in God, but you won't be able to do this if you disbelieve or if you're an agnostic. Now, not all of us are like that, okay? But imagine someone who is as described. And what James says is that's going to make a practical difference in how you lead your life. You ought to believe. And the fact that you have no evidence that God exists is really kind of irrelevant. So I hope you see here how James is attacking evidentialism, and he's trying to construct an example in which someone would be entitled to believe something upon insufficient evidence, doing not what W.K. Clifford recommended. So here's what I've been saying to you. Two questions. Suppose you are an evidentialist, should you be an atheist? And then the kind of prior question, should you be an evidentialist? Well, as for the first question, everything depends on what you mean by God exists. If you define God like, for example, young earth creationists do, then I think you should be, if you're an evidentialist, you should be an atheist. On the other hand, if you have this vaguer, more slippery notion of the God concept, maybe what evidentialism is going to tell you then is that you should be an agnostic about that idea, not an atheist about it. So it all depends on what you mean by God. As for the second question, should you accept evidentialism, you got to think about, among other things, you got to think about William James's argument against that position. And as many of you, I'm sure, realize, James at the end of the 19th century is just doing a kind of revamping of this argument from Pascal called Pascal's Wager from a couple centuries earlier. Pascal said you ought to believe in God because if God exists, you'll go to heaven. And if he doesn't, you'll go to hell. That's what believing God is all about. But if he doesn't exist, it doesn't much matter. And there have been controversies in philosophy about whether that's a good argument, but philosophers think it's not. What James did was take heaven and hell out of the picture and say, don't think about that. Think about what will allow you to lead a happy, productive life. And if believing in God helps you to do it, James says, you ought to be a believer. Here's a residual question that I haven't really talked about, which is what does the concept of evidence actually mean? Evidentialism says you should believe something only if you have evidence for it. You should believe something only if you have evidence against it. What does this evidence relationship mean? How are we supposed to understand that? That's a philosophical question that I'm not going to talk about. You're lucky to hear that. So thanks.
All right, let's open up to some questions. You guys know how it works. Come over here if you want to ask a question.
So one perspective on this is that you're talking in a qualitative way about something that you could approach quantitatively. So Bayesian approach to epistemology has some of its own tricky issues, but at least that answers questions like what is evidence and how do you deal with things which don't on their surface seem testable, because the lack of an evidence that you would see if it were true perhaps is at least some evidence against it. So where does that fit into this debate?
Okay, the question in sort of probability and philosophy, there's this philosophy called Bayesianism, where instead of talking, as I've done tonight, about whether you ought to believe something or disbelieve it, like it's like pregnancy, you either are or you aren't, or are not, in Bayesianism, you have degrees of certainty. So there's no such thing as believing or not. It's how strongly or weakly you believe. And one could then recast a lot of what I was saying in that sort of quantitative form. And evidentialism can be formulated in a Bayesian way. And then the question is it ever reasonable to have a strong degree of belief in something that has no evidence confirming it? And then the whole story would play out from there.
Hey, thank you for your talk. I love the use of subscripts to denote different sorts of gods. I think that's proof that you're in the presence of a real philosopher, right? That subscripts are used.
And also a polytheist.
Oh, yes, you should. You
definitely
should have one for those. I want to ask about your New Age God formulation. And this is an argument I've been toying with, and I'd like to hear what you think about it. It seems to me that if you say that in principle there might be a God for which we could never find any evidence whatsoever, either confirming or disconfirming, you've effectively said that that God doesn't exist. That in fact that's what we mean precisely by saying something doesn't exist. That it is impossible to find any evidence that it exists or it does not. What distinction are you making between existence and something for which...
Okay, I disagree with the middle step in what you're saying. The fact that we can't get evidence either in support of the existence of this being or against it, to me does not mean that it doesn't exist. It means we're cut off from knowing whether it exists.
How is that different in any meaningful way?
Well, picture the world, okay? And picture us in our puny, momentary, and imperfect ways of grasping things not so great sometimes. And then there's the rest of the universe, which is richer. I'm not even talking about God now. There could be facts about the universe that we puny humans could never get a grip on. I mean, to me, that's a kind of plausible picture. I'm not talking about God now. I just think human beings are organisms. There are limitations on what we can even think about, let alone get evidence for. And so the world is a lot bigger place than what we can find out. So that's where there's room in the sort of philosophy I'm describing for maybe there are facts about the world which we could never evaluate in terms of getting evidence for them or maybe against them. And so the fact that we're cut off doesn't mean the thing doesn't exist. It just means we're cut off. That's the picture I have.
Hi. In case you didn't know. So I apologize if my question doesn't really make much sense, but just from first principles...
We're used to that in philosophy.
Oh, sure.
Don't worry about it.
I'm in good company. Just from first principles, to only disprove something when you have evidence, what about the burden of proof logical fallacy? That's just like, it just hit me.
Okay.
That like I'm confused by why that is necessary. And also, I mean, there are various forms of utilitarianism that seem to also sort of offer an out. But I'd just like to get your response to the first.
Okay, so here's a different view from evidentialism. It says, I'll make up an example. With respect to the question of whether God exists, you should start off believing that there's no such thing, and only if the evidence nudges you away from that, should you then maybe become a theist or an agnostic? But your default assumption, your assumption you should make before you get any evidence whatever, is that the world doesn't include a God. Now that's very different. That's a kind of, so to speak, atheism is innocent until proven guilty. You can imagine a flip side of that, where the default assumption, a lot of theists believe this, is that God, you should assume that God exists from the get-go. You don't need any evidence. And only if there's a compelling reason to walk away from that should you become an agnostic or an atheist. So both of these philosophies say you are entitled to believe things on zero evidence. Those are your default assumptions. And then maybe as the evidence rolls in, you change your mind. Evidentialism disagrees with both of those. It says there's no default assumption you're entitled to. You shouldn't believe either way until you've got evidence either for the existence of God or evidence against it. But when you're in the state of zero evidence, you should be an agnostic. And that's different from the kind of default assumption picture that I think you were describing, where it's the burden of proof idea. The atheist says, well, I don't believe in God, and I'm going to keep doing that until you can prove to me that God exists. And then the other kind of person like that is the theist who says, I'm going to believe in God, and I'm going to change my mind only if you can prove that there can't be such a being. Yeah.
Outside of the theism-atheism relationship of evidism, it seems like evidism argues against its own self, that if you buy into evidencism, it hasn't given proof to buy into the philosophy in the first place. Can you speak to that?
Yeah, good question. So evidentialism says how you should conduct your life in terms of what you get to believe and what you get to disbelieve. So let's apply evidentialism to itself and say, okay, Mr. Evidentialist, what's your evidence for evidentialism? And that's a good question. And I don't know. But don't laugh so much, because I think a lot of atheists have evidentialism as their sort of foundation stone. They think, look, why am I an atheist? Because I look at the evidence. And so they've embraced that. So I didn't talk today about how you would justify evidentialism. I was just saying, if you accept this, how should you comport yourself with respect to the question of belief or disbelief? And then secondly, I mentioned a little bit about reasons that people have offered doubting evidentialism. But it's a really good question, like, okay, why should you believe evidentialism?
So in your talk, you had atheism and agnosticism as two different choices people could make. And what I think of atheism and agnosticism is that it's two different questions. One is, do you know there's a God? One is, do you believe in that God? And atheism is even specific to a God. You're using the capital G God, but there's plenty of gods. So, I mean, there's even a scenario where you can be an agnostic theist, you can be an agnostic atheist, you can be a Gnostic theist and a Gnostic atheist. So, you know, how do you consider that in your argument?
Okay, that's a nice distinction. So you notice that the first two principles up here make claims about what exists and what does not exist. The third one isn't about what exists, it's about us and what we know or don't know. So that's an important distinction, and it might be the case, this is a possibility, right, that we ought to be agnostics, but in fact there is no God. So atheism is true. So the idea that there's a kind of what's going on here? We already knew that, right? But here's even more evidence that it doesn't exist. Okay, so three propositions. One and two are at odds with each other. They can't both be right. But one and three, two and three, they're consistent with each other. I think that's the point you're making. However, here's the way I was setting it up. There are three attitudes you could take. You could assert, believe that God exists. You could believe that God does not exist. Or you could say, I'm suspending judgment. And those are three choices. And you got to choose one of those three. They don't go together in harmony. But your distinction is a good one.
Okay. So then when you're talking about agnosticism, you're really talking about a suspension of belief, not a knowledge.
Yes. Okay. Yeah, good.
Okay.
Yes.
Thanks.
Good.
I was just going to ask a quick question as far as James' response to evidentialism, and maybe this is an obvious thing to point out, but it seems like it's pretty easy to take his argument to absurdity, and that it's extremely individualistic. So it seems like you could easily stick anything in. It is impossible to live a happy, productive life without believing in God, therefore it's justifiable. You could say that about anything that someone believes in himself,
yes.
They can't live a happy and productive life about.
Well, you think that's a kind of disproof of James's argument?
Is that, yes, exactly. That's the okay. point I'm making.
Let's go back to that slide. So James is here imagining someone, so to speak, whose healthy life depends on believing that God exists. But change the example. It's just a different example. Someone whose healthy life, for some reason, depends on their believing that the moon is made of green cheese. I mean, it doesn't matter. According to James, if that's what it takes for you to have a healthy, productive life, go for it. So it's incidental to the kind of argument he's giving about evidentialism that he's thinking about belief in God. It could be anything. I mean, for James, one of the things that he felt was in this category was believing in free will. He had a nervous breakdown thinking about free will, as many of us in philosophy do. And, you know, he embraced it.
Well, what about, like, if someone's happy, productive life is like Hitler? Maybe he was happy and he thought he was productive his whole life? That's fine.
You know. Well, we don't want a productive life for people like Hitler.
If that's the argument.
So the argument is addressed to someone who is a very nice person who will do a lot of good in the world if that person can extricate himself or herself from despair. Come on, think about somebody in your family. And you say, you know what? You should believe that stuff. That's what James is saying. I mean, he's not talking to Hitler here.
All right, thanks a lot. Let's give him another round of applause.